Cambridge Certificate of Proficiency in English 4 by University of Cambridge ESOL Examinations in conjunction with Cambridge University Press. This recording is copyright. CD 2. Cambridge Certificate of Proficiency in English Listening Test. Test 3. I'm going to give you the instructions for this test. I'll introduce each part of the test and give you time to look at the questions. At the start of each piece, you'll hear this sound. You'll hear each piece twice. Remember, while you're listening, write your answers on the question paper. You'll have 5 minutes at the end of the test to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. There'll now be a pause. Please ask any questions now because you must not speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part one. You'll hear 4 different extracts. For questions 1 to 8, choose the answer, A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. There are 2 questions for each extract. Extract 1.
First on the programme today, we'll discuss the consultation document the UK airport authorities have just brought out as part of their forward planning for the next 30 years. Of course, 30 years from now, we might be exploring the option of shuttle flights to Mars, but that's by the by. This document is concerned with more mundane, in fact strictly down-to-earth considerations. Delays, cancellations, lost baggage, congestion, the potential development of the air freight sector, the integration of airports with the surface transportation infrastructure. Hardly fly me to the moon stuff. But above all, its headline target is to give the travelling public a better deal. I asked the Transport Minister Helen Fraser to comment.
We have to strike a balance. The government certainly won't be committing itself to providing massive resources. Even if we can see the number of passengers is going to double, we can't necessarily double the number of runways, and the public will have to accept that. People are very keen to fly, but nobody's too keen to have a runway near them. So we have to talk about it thoroughly, and this document's a useful step in the consultative process.
First on the programme today, we'll discuss the consultation document the UK airport authorities have just brought out as part of their forward planning for the next 30 years. Of course, 30 years from now, we might be exploring the option of shuttle flights to Mars, but that's by the by. This document is concerned with more mundane, in fact strictly down-to-earth considerations. Delays, cancellations, lost baggage, congestion, the potential development of the air freight sector, the integration of airports with the surface transportation infrastructure. Hardly fly me to the moon stuff. But above all, its headline target is to give the travelling public a better deal. I asked the Transport Minister Helen Fraser to comment.
We have to strike a balance. The government certainly won't be committing itself to providing massive resources. Even if we can see the number of passengers is going to double, we can't necessarily double the number of runways, and the public will have to accept that. People are very keen to fly, but nobody's too keen to have a runway near them. So we have to talk about it thoroughly, and this document's a useful step in the consultative process.
Extract 2.
My husband forgot my birthday this year, and he minded more than I did. I'm afraid that's what happens when you get to my age. Birthdays lose their resonance, and you're lucky if they're acknowledged at all. Some people would say you're luckier if they go unacknowledged, but I wouldn't go that far. But there again, it's more important that he remembers the kids' birthdays, isn't it? Be that as it may, in the event, he could see that I was a bit put out, because there is a residual excitement there. There's no getting away from it. It's nothing to do with getting older, although when I was 9 or 10, that was all important. To think I used to long for the day when I'd be married with kids. No, what I feel now is more a little thrill, bred of nostalgia for the old excitement, I used to feel, you know, about the attention, the presence and being more grown up, notching up another year towards adulthood. My husband forgot my birthday this year, and he minded more than I did. I'm afraid that's what happens when you get to my age. Birthdays lose their resonance, and you're lucky if they're acknowledged at all. Some people would say you're luckier if they go unacknowledged, but I wouldn't go that far. But there again, it's more important that he remembers the kids' birthdays, isn't it? Be that as it may, in the event, he could see that I was a bit put out, because there is a residual excitement there. There's no getting away from it. It's nothing to do with getting older, although when I was 9 or 10, that was all important. To think I used to long for the day when I'd be married with kids. No, what I feel now is more a little thrill, bred of nostalgia for the old excitement I used to feel, you know, about the attention, the presence and being more grown up, notching up another year towards adulthood.
Extract 3.
Frankly, I don't see why, just because a museum's for science and technology and not ancient artefacts and paintings, that means it's got to go down market and have all these interactive exhibits, you know, pushing buttons and flashing lights.
It stands to reason that they are pitched at a younger audience, school parties, kids with parents, etc. And I'm afraid it's just no longer the case that kids will wander around in awe looking at a lot of old engine exhibits in glass boxes or drawers full of nuts and bolts. They won't put up with it. And if the numbers don't come in through the doors, then the museum is answerable, which is just what happened in Belton.
But that means, as usual, we're pandering to the lowest common denominator. Quoting examples of failed museums is not enough. More thorough investigation needs to be done. I mean, how do we know that customers won't like a few more traditional exhibits? I know my kids do, and I don't think they're exceptional.
That'll mean more money going into research instead of into the museums themselves.
Frankly, I don't see why, just because a museum's for science and technology and not ancient artefacts and paintings, that means it's got to go down market and have all these interactive exhibits, you know, pushing buttons and flashing lights.
It stands to reason that they are pitched at a younger audience, school parties, kids with parents, etc. And I'm afraid it's just no longer the case that kids will wander around in awe looking at a lot of old engine exhibits in glass boxes or drawers full of nuts and bolts. They won't put up with it. And if the numbers don't come in through the doors, then the museum is answerable, which is just what happened in Belton.
But that means, as usual, we're pandering to the lowest common denominator. Quoting examples of failed museums is not enough. More thorough investigation needs to be done. I mean, how do we know that customers won't like a few more traditional exhibits? I know my kids do, and I don't think they're exceptional.
That'll mean more money going into research instead of into the museums themselves.
Extract 4.
This is an extremely witty book, written in a racy style. It moves along at a great pace. The descriptions are crisp, the action dramatic. In fact, I've only got one reservation, but I fear it's an insurmountable one, because this is, in fact, an historical novel dealing with the life and experiences of Mary, Queen of Scots, so we're going back 4 centuries. And apart from inventing dialogue between people who were not actually contemporaries, the writer has peppered the story with anachronisms so gross as to be almost a source of entertainment in themselves. I found myself half expecting a bicycle or train to appear amongst the carts and carriages at any moment, and I wish I could believe that she was writing a spoof. But sadly, this is not the case, and this is the aspect of the book which will spoil it for the intelligent reader. Although, if you can suspend disbelief for a bit in favour of an evening of pure escapism, it's actually a jolly good read for all its shortcomings. This is an extremely witty book, written in a racy style. It moves along at a great pace. The descriptions are crisp, the action dramatic. In fact, I've only got one reservation, but I fear it's an insurmountable one, because this is, in fact, an historical novel dealing with the life and experiences of Mary, Queen of Scots, so we're going back 4 centuries. And apart from inventing dialogue between people who were not actually contemporaries, the writer has peppered the story with anachronisms so gross as to be almost a source of entertainment in themselves. I found myself half expecting a bicycle or train to appear amongst the carts and carriages at any moment, and I wish I could believe that she was writing a spoof. But sadly, this is not the case, and this is the aspect of the book which will spoil it for the intelligent reader. Although, if you can suspend disbelief for a bit in favour of an evening of pure escapism, it's actually a jolly good read for all its shortcomings.
That's the end of part 1.